This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Apparently your music's now going to become an aphrodisiac as well.
Probably told me to get off.
Come on.
Oh, it's sort of broken now.
Sorry, I got itchy nuts. Let's share that. There's a readjust.
Welcome to the podcast, show number 27 for the Cubby House podcast. Tonight, we are joined by Craig, who's the winner of Mr. Australasia Bear 2010, and his partner, Scott, who's one of the many pianists with the most impressive skill I've seen in all my years. We'll be talking about Southern Hibernation, what they're going through, and they're also flying off for a trip. So all that and much, much more on show number 27 of the Cubby House podcast. Hello, Kevin.
Hey, Cookie.
Hello, Craig.
Hey.
How are we?
I'm well.
Good,
thanks.
Good. How are we feeling about hibernation, about travelling and all that sort of stuff?
Excited and anxious about travel. I wish the excitement would take over from the anxiety, but I'm starting to do crazy things now, so...
Like come here to Cookies and do podcasts.
No, yesterday I was in a panic. I was thinking, I've left something behind. I thought, oh no, I've got no mouthwash. And then I thought, I'm going to Europe, not Angola. They'll have mouthwash there, so it's all right.
And that voice you heard, which you haven't yet said hello to, Scott, how are you?
Well, I'm really fantastic. Yep. Also looking forward to the holiday. And well and truly rested after Southern Hibernation because it was a pretty full-on week, particularly with Craig being an entrant in the competition. I think it was rather exhausting.
Now, Hibernation, we'll start with there because it's been and gone. How did you feel about it overall, apart from the exhausting part?
I'm not quite sure what you mean. How did I feel about it? I think the most impressive thing was seeing the wonderful event that was put on by those really hardworking guys. Everybody, you know, not everybody, but, you know, some people always like to make a little criticism or something like that. Most people go along and enjoy. And, you know, you just know that it's put on by a very few small working committee. And I think the week was absolutely superb. And I noticed there are a lot of newer initiatives. And look, I think the week worked. And I think it was just so thrilling to see such a great result at the end of the week. You know, the workload's borne by just a very few small amount of people. And I think it was an absolute fantastic week. And I think it was an absolute credit to the hardworking small team who put the whole thing on. I think it was absolutely fantastic.
I loved it. I had a great time. Yeah, I thought the whole thing was good. It was a different perspective for me this time. And I had to have a bit of a mind shift because I thought I was so panicked about the competition and stressed out about it that I thought I can't let this ruin what I think is my favourite week in Melbourne. So, yeah, no, I loved it from Wednesday onwards.
Wednesday, you say? Why Wednesday?
I think I was just worried about the competition, worried about I was overthinking it. I was worried what people would think and how I'd come off. I was very nervous and worried how supported I was. And I knew I was very supported with my friends. And I thought, I don't want to go, you know, Scott was very supportive and all my close friends. And I thought, oh God, I don't want to be like one of those kids on Idol who their mum tells them that they're really fantastic and they go along and everyone says, oh yeah, Simon Cowell says you're really shit. So I thought, yeah, that's what I was really worried about. But I had some really positive support from people who just came up to me in the community, from the community, and guys that I don't know all that well and some that I do. And that changed my thinking. I thought, yeah, absolutely, I'm going to go on this to win now. And I'm going to enjoy the rest of my week and enjoy the events that were put on, which incidentally, everyone did a great job. Fantastic hibernation.
Thank God we have no Simon Cowells in our judging panel.
You've made mention it was from Wednesday, but when did you actually decide you were going to go in the competition?
Maybe
I'll answer about that.
When was it?
I'll answer that.
I can't remember.
Really, I think we've been talking very friendly with Cookie this evening while Kevin's cooked us a beautiful meal. We've enjoyed a lovely dinner and a beautiful time. And we've been talking about, you know, you having a little bit of anxiety and all that sort of thing. I think over a longer term, Craig's probably...
So, darling, the answer to the question was...
Yes, you've gained a lot of confidence. You've gained a lot of confidence. And then a few weeks previously, you went in the bear chess competition. You're unsuccessful, which is just...
So, I the answer to it. The question is about 10 days before the nomination started.
I've sort of pushed you into it with the president of Vic Bears, Ricky Cooper, from the point of view that I knew that you would like to do something like this and challenge yourself. And I think you were really ready to... You took it on as a personal challenge. So, yes, it was only a couple of weeks out, but I think longer term you were...
Yeah, I had thought about doing something like that, but I didn't think I'd have the confidence to actually get up and do it. So, probably seriously about 2 weeks before.
So, what was it before Wednesday that kind of put your mindset as to you not feeling ready to go into it? Was there... feeling well or something?
I'm not a super confident person. I think people probably perceive me as being that maybe because of the way I look or something, but it's not really the case. I'm a bit of a perfectionist, and I'm not one of those people that think, oh yeah, I'm going to do really great at this. I kind of think, oh, these are the reasons why I won't do good. And I started comparing myself. I was thinking, oh, okay, to the other guys. And I was thinking, oh, my butt's furrier than his, but he's got more chest hair, but my beard's a little bit thicker, but he's this and he's that. And, you know, so I was thinking of all the reasons why I might not win. And then someone else said to me, why don't you make a list of all the reasons why you should win and why you deserve it? And that just changed my whole thinking process. And I thought, yeah, absolutely. I do deserve it. And that's what I'm going to go and tell them. And that's what I'm going to show them.
And I think you had a little bit of insecurity around the issue of the wider community. I mean, your friends know that you absolutely adore bears. I'm a bear. All our good friends are bears. And you really do identify with being a bear. And I think you were just a little bit nervous maybe that out in the wider community, how you'd be perceived as a bear when, you know, you are actually furry. It mightn't look like that in some of the modelling pics that you'd done. But, yeah, I think that was a little bit of an insecurity for you as well. You're worried about the wider community. Your close law supporters all know that you're a genuine bear.
Didn't need any visual cues to inspire you to continue to do it?
Yes, no, I did actually. Yeah, that was a bit. Scott was putting, DVDs, porn DVDs, and saying, that guy looks like you, that guy looks like you, and he'd point them out or have pictures on the internet. And if you remember the ad for, I think it was Underbear, that guy's really muscly, he's like, he's like you. So that was quite interesting. So I had all these pictures of hot, well, guys that he thought were hot around the place. And so,
whereas some of the promos previously, not that long ago, 3, 4, 5 years ago, you would never see as perfect, you know, some of the bears. There was one in particular, this guy with a totally muscular furry ass. What was that one?
That was Underbear. Underbear.
It was just like, you know, I mean, we just didn't see that not so long ago. I mean, I've only been in Melbourne since 2005, but...
And that's what you see when you travel too, just all different types of bears. And we've got this sticker at home that I bought, actually. Someone bought it for me at Dalesford a couple of years ago. It said, bears come in all shapes and sizes.
And I like to think bears comes.
Yeah, so do I.
At all.
And, yeah, so it was good to see a little bit of a bit more diversity in advertising this year, I think. It's good. So,
cool. All right, so we've come through. You've been put into the competition. Run us through how it kind of went down for you.
Okay, Friday night I started to get a little... We went to the contestant dinner and we were told what we were going to have to do. And I thought, okay, this is going to be the first time I have to really put myself out there without going to work, going there drunk. Even if I get nervous, I have to do this totally stone cold sober. So I thought, all right. So I got myself into prepared for that. But oh, it's just I had a great time Friday night, just going around, just all the positive support from the guys. It was just a fantastic night. And we got to sort of have a bit of a dance and to Kodiak afterwards, which was great, and just let off a bit of steam. But it was very exhausting. And I tell you what, I've had my knees from kneeling down, which was fun, getting your face in people's groin.
Now, why were you kneeling down? You selling tickets?
We were selling tickets, yeah. You could sell a couple or you could do their inseam for $5. So I had this great way that instead of, because I thought I'd do something a little bit different than the other guys, so people would see me and go, oh, I'm going to buy them off him. So what I did is I held the tickets in my mouth, put it my face on their groin, and then went down on their inseam to the bottom. So that worked out quite well. So I think I sold the most, actually, I was told. So I was pretty pleased with
that. That's a big
achievement. So. Mm. For Cookie and I, we thought we were exempt because we were photographers for the actual event. Subsequently found out afterwards we were not exempt. So we missed out on all the fun.
What did you mean being exempt?
Because we're on the official sort of committee thing that was running it as well. We thought we weren't allowed to win because it would be seen as favoritism.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's what Rick said too. And I thought he just wanted to get groped. That's what he was missing out on. We said that would be a conflict of interest. You just wanted a groping, I think.
Well, you're a contestant. That's one of the things you're there for.
That's it.
Okay, so that was Friday night. You've had your fun, gone home. Saturday morning was the breakfast. What happened there for you?
Okay, I didn't really know what was going on there. I knew that there'd be a bit of a question time and we'd be asked something. And I sort of prepared the week before and asked a few people what sort of questions could I possibly be asked. I thought about what I'd done for Bear Community and what I'd done in the wider community, what I was doing for the rest of the year, and just a few things like that, which actually came in real handy. Unfortunately, that most of the questions they asked me were things that I hadn't thought of, but at least I was sort of prepared along that line. So we got to meet the judges. Two of them I'd picked. I thought, oh yeah, you might be judges, but the rest of them I hadn't. So that was quite interesting because you sort of think, oh gee, I was groping him with raffle tickets the night before. So that was good. Everyone was pretty tense, I think, the other contestants. And I just thought to myself, and that was the part I thought, okay, I've got to keep it together. I thought I've prepared for this. I'm just going to go in and I'm going to sell myself the best I can. Yeah. And then basically we went in for one interview. We saw Peter was just in the door at the Laird, and we went in and spoke to him. And then all of a sudden you came around and there was the five judges, and that was pretty intense. It was like being at a group interview for a job, and you sat down and it wasn't all sort of smiley. It was very serious. And yeah, so I was a lot calmer than I thought I could be. And I was astounded, actually. So it was a really good personal growth moment for me as well. So I was really pleased with my effort personally on that.
You came home and you were pretty happy at that point. And I think for the evening you'd sort of realised, you were just so happy with how the interview had gone and everything up to that point that you just thought you were going to enjoy the night and just do the best you could, and it was good. And you were a little bit nervous on the first little act in the evening, and I thought, oh no.
I got asked the worst questions though, and I just freaked out. My questions were horrible. They had
There was a list
of all these things that they could have, that they said they were going to ask you about, you wrote down before, and they asked me something completely different. Like, what was the weirdest thing you've bought from Man House or something? I'm just like, oh my God.
I'm sure we've got some photos of some of the stuff you could have got.
Yes, possibly.
All right, so what else after that first act? How did you feel? Because the next act was Bare Minimum.
Yep.
So how did you feel about stripping down to almost nothing in front of a stage full of people?
You had the teddy bear. The teddy bear was...
That was the almost part.
That was the almost.
That was the almost part. No, I didn't have a problem with that, actually.
You were fantastic. You were fantastic by that stage.
Yeah, I'm pretty comfortable with being next to nude around people. Yeah, no, that part was pretty easy. I wanted to do something a little bit different, and I thought when I walked down with the teddy bear, and I didn't plan the part, but when I turned around, I thought, what am I going to do just to wind this up a little bit? So that's when I got to the back of the stage. I dropped the teddy bear and then picked it down. It got a really good reaction, so I was quite pleased with that. That was just a spontaneous thing. I hadn't planned to do that. So
you could see your hole. You could see the nuts dangling down. You could see the whole lot. That was fucking brilliant. That's the highlight of my night.
Nice.
That was beautiful.
And then the final act, which you had, was a rimming contest on stage. How did that go?
Well, that actually came as part of, it was inspired by something that actually happened at Underbear. It was a previous contestant and one of the guys that was in my, that was there that night on stage. I said, just for a joke, I'm not going to be the first person tonight that gets my underwear off. And they picked me up, put me over a table and started rimming me. So I said, oh, this would be great if they had a competition and gave out for Mr. Southern Hibernation Arse Eater. So I thought, yeah, that, I'll do that. Thought it'd be a bit different, and, you know, as opposed to dressing up as a policeman or something like that. So,
and you had a good representation of bears too, not just one sort. Or, and so, yeah, I think it was good. And it was nice and short instead of, you know, if you go too long, you just want it to be interesting at that point. It was good. And I had no input to that, did I? I decided that that was totally going to be your...
I said to everyone, I said, look, it's up to you. I said, I won't have you facing the stage because I wanted people to sort of think, oh, are they doing it or aren't they? But I said to all the guys, I said, look, you can simulate it if you want to, or you can go for the real thing. But, yeah, I was pretty happy with what they all chose. So
you got the real thing. That's cool. So was there any backstage goss that you can give us?
Backstage goss? Not really. It was all pretty relaxed and friendly. Yeah, we did try and put Mr. New Zealand off a little bit at one stage where we were chasing him around naked, but but yeah, it was all friendly. It was just, yeah, just a really good time.
So you've come, you won the competition, so congratulations on that. That was,
thank you.
That was definitely a shot out of the blue for you.
Yeah, absolutely. So no, I went, as I said, I went in it to win it, but I kind of didn't think I would. And I probably overthought it too much, and that really did help me when someone said to me, just think why you should win. So, and that would actually be my advice to anyone else who went in the future.
So coming out of it, Roundup was the last event that was had for Hibernation. How does it feel to get up and be part of all the mini competitions that they had throughout the night and having to pick out the best butts and all that sort of stuff?
Oh, that was good fun. Yeah, I really enjoyed that. I was starting to get tired, though. That was the only thing, because adrenaline wasn't kicking in anymore, because I knew I didn't really have to anything official to do. That was good. The only bad thing was, I don't know if you saw this part, but we were throwing things out from the sponsors, and I threw a bottle of Amyl out, and it hit someone in the, bounced off someone's head and hit someone in the bridge of the nose, and I couldn't see because it was dark.
It's Carl, actually.
And it was Carl. And Scott came up to me, and I said, did I hit someone? He said, yeah, he's in the toilet. His nose is bleeding really badly. So I felt really bad. So I asked the boys if I could have another bottle, and I went up and gave it, was going to give it to him later. And I went to hold it out. He's like, get away from me with that bottle. So no, we had a big hug, and yeah, that's funny, but I felt a bit sorry for him.
That's fine. We have after photos. See your carnage. So now that it's all done and dusted, what are you doing with the title these days?
Most of my planning at the moment has been on focusing on my holiday overseas, but hopefully in the near future, we're definitely going over to New Zealand. I'd like to do a bit more promotion for Southern Hibernation, and me and Rick are going to have a talk about a few things that we're going to do. The good thing is he's going to be in San Francisco the same time as we are, so, and I've been quite a lot of times, so there's a lot of things that I'd like to show him that I think would work well, and yeah, just my main thing is to get over to New Zealand, be a week, and do a bit of promotion over there. And yeah, I've got a few other things to think about where I'm going to go. And
this is our big trip coming up. So it's obviously taken a lot of saving and all that sort of thing. So I think Rick was thinking of something in February next year. We probably think, you know, it's for Craig to go on. We probably think that February is a little bit early. So once again, we just need to touch base with Rick. We've sort of just had hibernation. We've had a bit of a rest and now we're going away. So we sort of, once we get back, we definitely need to. It was great you went last Saturday night, I think it was, and you gave the check for $8,000 for the charity.
I've always wanted to hold a fake, large, oversized check, and I got to do it.
So I think that was really fantastic. The future, we sort of need to have Rick as a bit of a sounding board and then work towards our next plan, which it will be next year, probably before Southern Hibernation or maybe just before Southern Hibernation.
The reason I ask is we rarely get a Melbourneian getting the title. Absolutely. Of the last few years. So I just wanted to know if you're going to use it for any other persuasive intents.
I didn't really need to use it to persuade anyone to do anything. I was, I don't know if I want to elaborate on that anymore, but yeah, no, it did have some, upsides to it, let me say that.
No, I think what Cookie's thinking is there anything for the benefit of Melbourne's community.
He wasn't thinking year. That.
No, he was definitely thinking of the title as an aphrodisiac.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Oh, see, okay. I know what he's thinking
about. What
about
the guy that wanted you to keep the sash on while you went at it? Yeah, that was an interesting story.
That was an interesting story.
Care to elaborate on that interesting story?
Well, Craig said, oh, should I take the sash off? And the guy goes, oh, please, please, keep it on, keep it on.
Puts a whole new meaning to sash queen.
There you go.
Shoves his butt in the air. Please.
So you've only got 2 days to go, and you're travelling where?
Well, most of the time we'll be in Europe, but I'll give you the whole rundown. We've decided to break the trip up, and we're going to stay in Singapore overnight, and we fly out the next night at 10 o'clock, and then we're going to Amsterdam for Canal Pride, to Hamburg for their Leather Week, then to Paris, London, and
you have to go to XXL London.
Can't wait for XXL, and then to Berlin for Folsom, and then over to San Francisco.
So for 10 days.
For about 10 days, which we won't be there for Folsom, San Francisco, unfortunately, because we can't stay away any longer. It's been a huge trip.
But we might make it up to Palm Springs to spend some time at Tip Pig.
I heard that on your Facebook. Do you want to elaborate as to how that came about?
Well, we've both thought it was just the hottest thing ever. And we sent him a message on Bear 411 ages ago and never heard anything back. And then just I was chatting to someone the other day, and I just thought, I'm just going to sign his guest book, and I woofed him. So then I get this message back and said, you guys are really hot, I see you traveling over. And I'm thinking, oh my god, I can't believe this. So we're messaging back and forth, and that's what I put on Facebook. I kept thinking, right, oh my god, I'm talking to Tit Pig online, please don't let me come off like a 12-year-old girl. So I sort of had to relax and think of what I was going to say to him. And he said, he'd be interested in hooking up. So I rang Scott, and that was the end of him concentrating all day. He's like, message him back and do this, message him back. And I said, we can't come off like stalkers. So I said, only one message a day from now on. So so we might make a detour to Palm Springs.
More than just your messaging, didn't you?
Yeah. It got pretty interesting. Yeah, that's a
Craig
good way
of putting it. Craig noticed he would have only been typing with one hand.
You know when you get those abbreviated messages that come in really quickly? Yeah, so
I wonder, should we let the listeners know what our profile name is on Bear411?
So the rest of us can stalk you.
Most people have seen it anyway. Okay, next question.
Anyway, let's hope that comes off. That'd be a nice way to end our trip.
Seriously, everyone that's seen my penis that wants to see it has seen it by now, and your hole. So, anyway.
That'll be a nice end to the trip. But going back to Amsterdam, we'll be there for Canal Pride, and we're going to go to a couple of really big dance parties. And same in Berlin. But in Hamburg, there's a party on a boat. And I think it's called the MS Stubnitz. I think that's what it's called.
It's my birthday that night too, so they're good.
Your birthday on a dance party.
Yeah.
What have you been up to in the last couple of years which you've had birthdays on your a dance party on your birthdays?
Actually, last year I was in Hawaii for my birthday, and we went on a gay cruise from Hula's Bar, which is good. And there are a whole lot of guys from Australia there that we'd met up with. And I've been away quite a few times on my birthday, so I usually try and plan it that way. So I've been up to Vancouver once and did their Pride Week around my birthday time. And
The birthday bash is quite common on your birthday then?
No, I just hate cold, so I went away for my I just like going. It's a good August is a cold time because, sort of the end of winter, and so my birthday's mid-August, so good time to go away.
We'll be in Paris for my birthday.
Planning on sitting on the Eiffel Tower?
I would like to be doing that on my birthday, yes. And then having a big breadstick and lovely cheese and beautiful wine, sitting in the European sun under it afterwards. Oh, it'd be so nice.
We'll be.
Well, we'll be, because you'll be there too.
Oh,
we'll be together.
No.
You said XXL. For those who don't know what that is, it's a bear party?
Yeah, it's a bear club, actually. It's on Wednesday and Saturday nights. Wednesday night it goes till 3 and Saturday nights it goes till 6 a.m., I think. And it's for bears, hairy guys, admirers, all sorts of things. They've got a website and they're on Facebook as well. Yeah, so really looking forward to that. Just kind of having a bit of a dance. And we know some guys that are over there at the moment that are going to be in town at the same time. So,
do you want to say hello to anybody while we're at it?
Who's over there at the moment? Chris Meek is over there at the moment. So, yeah, we're going to catch up with him while we're over there. Actually, in Berlin.
And we're staying with two gorgeous bears that we met at the bear chess competition before Southern Hibernation, a couple of weeks before. And I said, yeah, come and stay with us. And they live right in, what is it,
Vauxhall? In Vauxhall, by the Royal Vauxhall Tavern. So that'll be good. So a lot of bears go there. So it'll be fun.
So you've said you've been to San Francisco a few times doing Folsom, I take it?
I've been to quite a few Folsoms. I've been to Dory Alley, Harrison Street Bear Fair, Castro, Love. They used to call it Love Parade, but I think they changed it because of the German one. So it's called Love Fest now.
Mm-hmm.
A few other things that have been on there. I just love San Francisco. It's like my second home. Got lots of good friends there and, yeah, love it.
Have you been to Berlin one? And is that why you're going this year?
No, I've never been to Europe. It's my first trip.
Okay. So what are you expecting to find?
Uncut cock.
big, no, big, big.
That's the first answer is always the honest one, isn't it? No, I don't know. I just, we're going over, and we'll have a bit of a play round, obviously, but we're going over, we both love art, culture, that sort of thing too. And I think Berlin's rich in that sort of thing. We're doing this really cool thing that I found online called a Segway tour of Berlin. It goes for 4 hours and you get to ride one of those cool little motorized things with the wheels and the handle. So that's pretty cool. And there's a guide and there's, I think there's 8 to 10 people in your group and they show you around. You get to go to Brandenburg Gate and Checkpoint, where Checkpoint Charlie used to be. And so, yeah, so we'll do a lot of the cultural things. We kind of, that's the way we've planned it, is we go and do the cultural things first. Mm-hmm. And then on the weekends, it's kind of party time.
I'm going to San Francisco. Mind you, while I'm over there, there was somebody who we had on the podcast, his music, Robert Bomb Shelter, who I'm finally getting to catch up with and actually interview in person. For those of you who have been waiting for that interview, finally got it coming. I'd like to know what I'm going to expect in San Francisco from what you guys have experienced, because I'll be going specifically for Fulton. I want to know what sort of things to expect. What could you tell me?
What sort of, you'll expect long queues, but once you get into venues, lots of hot guys, very friendly. There's a lot of smaller, more underground things happening as well. There's everything from, you know, all the real heavy duty sex leather party and play parties are happening. There's a lot of dance parties on that weekend. There's two major ones. There's Magnitude, which is on the Saturday night, which is kind of, yeah, that's a bit more of a circuit party, a bit more of a mixed crowd, whereas there's Real Bad on Sunday afternoon after the actual fair. That's a great party. A lot of bears, heaps of big muscle daddies. Oh, fantastic. That goes to, I think it starts at about 7 and goes to about 2 or something.
Can we go there one time too, honey?
Yeah, we can.
Together?
So there's basically something for real. The street fair is amazing and you just see everything. Every type of leather, every type of kink, stuff you haven't even heard of or seen before, freaky stuff that you might not be into, stuff that you absolutely love, things that you've always wanted to try, you'll see them going on. The only thing is, I've noticed from year to year, sometimes it can be a little bit, I'll give you one example, that they sort of, they don't clean it up. Like, anywhere inside the fair area, you're allowed to be naked. You're not allowed to show your crack of your ass in San Francisco, and girls aren't allowed to show their nipples. So if you're wearing chaps, to get to the fair, you need to put like a hanky, if you're just wearing a jockstrap underneath, to cover your crack, otherwise you'll be arrested. Whereas in the fair, you can walk around with a hard on if you want. Now, there used to be a guy, they had a competition one year, it was called the World's Biggest Cum Stain, that I wanted to go into, and they had this huge big white sheet and they had all these hot guys there to jack off, so I thought I'm going to do that, but the cops came and said no ejaculation, you know, with nudity, hard on, yes, but that's no. So some years they'll let you get away with it a little bit more, and then other years it'll be, but there'll still be lots of wild stuff going on there. You'll just, eyes will be popping out of your head.
Well, let's hope it's like that in Berlin as well.
So,
all right, well, I've never been outside the oceanic area. What other things would I be expecting when I go overseas for the first time to America, say?
These are wonderful. I haven't been, well, we went to Hawaii last year for a little holiday. I was in New York in 2001. That's the last time I went. And I also managed to, on the East Coast, go and see Disneyland that I would have seen if I hadn't missed out on as a kid.
Did you say the East Coast?
Sorry, it's on the West Coast.
Sorry, that's all right. We're the East Coast.
I think it's a wonderful country, and I just can't wait to see more of it. You know, Craig's seen a lot more than me, but even just going to Hawaii last year, I think it is a wonderful country. So I think you should expect it to be absolutely fantastic. You know, the cities are bigger, the events that are on are bigger.
What about the culture? What's some of the main differences between the Australian and the American culture, would you say?
Americans like things a certain way, and I think they have their way of doing things. But they're very hospitable. You know, a lot of people say, oh, you know, why do you always go to the States? But Americans in their own country are fantastic. And if you haven't been there, they're the most hospitable people, great to be around, but they just don't like change. And if they're, so I think they get a bad rap when they're overseas. Culturally, places like San Francisco, very much similar to guys from Melbourne, very down to earth. Yeah, I don't know. So just, but it's a lot bigger country and there's a lot more to see. That's, well, a lot of people only go to the cities and compare. I think America is LA and New York, which is really kind of sad because it's a beautiful country. I've driven up, we took about 10 days and drove up the East Coast up to Canada once, and it's just amazing. Some beautiful countryside through the giant redwood forests and
that must be amazing.
The Napa Valley all out around that area, and where Lazy Bear is at, Rangoonville, and you know, through the Russian River area. Beautiful.
The reason I ask about the culture and about the parties and all that sort of stuff is something that I've been told on a few different areas, and it's kind of made me a bit worried. That is that San Francisco apparently has got a HIV rate of half the population in the gay culture. I've also found one of the owners of the Treasure Island Media has been quoted in saying HIV is the new coming out and everybody should get it and get it over and done with. So it makes me a bit worried stepping out of my comfort zone from the Melbourne culture into a completely new culture and saying, well, how do I go about interacting with that culture where I'm comfortable? What's the experiences you guys have had with dealing with that kind of a different culture?
I don't think anyone can force you to do anything that you don't want to do, to start off with. That's my first thing. And I'd like to say, I think that's a very irresponsible comment from someone like that. I like some of the stuff Treasure Island Media do, but I think they've got a responsibility to warn people. And I think that guy's comment is very stupid, but you can take that in a lot of ways. You know, I'm sure some junkie down the street could say, yeah, use heroin, it's the new thing, but you don't have to do that and you don't have to be involved in that. And people aren't going to force you and be involved in unsafe sex. And I think you just need to be a self-aware person. Like, if you know that you're the type of person that's going to get completely off your head and not being able to make conscious decisions, a possibility would be not to put yourself in that type of situation. And I think that's a reality in any city. If you get really out of it, there'll be people that will just assume, say, oh, okay, well, he hasn't said anything, so he must be the same as me. And I know that's where a lot of the HIV advertising has been around. But yeah, it all comes down to personal choice, and no one's going to force you to do anything that you don't want to do. That's been my experience anyway.
Well, with the Folsoms particularly, they've, I think it was last year, they actually banned Treasure Island Media from actually being represented at the festival because they wouldn't adhere to really simple things like, you know, advertising that safe sex is beneficial or that it's a good thing. Or, you know, just saying stuff like, we get our porn stars tested, yada, 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 we're responsible, blah, blah, blah. Just a small little message at the beginning of their videos.
Are you sure that isn't on all their videos anyway as a statutory regulation?
No.
They're not. You've actually seen sure a movie it's and it's... You're pretty sure? Pretty like 100% sure? Because I'm
considering
sure
that fact that
we've got are actually got the...
The early ones might have, but I'm pretty sure that because of the like his viewpoint...
Yeah.
And I'll be corrected if I'm wrong on this, but I'm pretty sure because his viewpoint is that HIV is... I think he likened it to diabetes on the fact that it's now a manageable disease, that you can simply take your drugs and carry on life as though everything's normal, everything's great, and just run out and do whatever you want.
From that viewpoint, I mean, it's really sad. If there's any connotation or any reference that anybody... There's nothing to get. out of being HIV positive. There's nothing to merit it. I think maybe it's interesting that he's thinking it's not a big deal. I think if you are a positive person and a young positive person and you make it a big deal, it will be. I always remember being in a peer group, going along to the Positive Living Centre, newly positive people. We all actually were positive about the same time, and this one particular fellow, I think he'd made it into such a deal. Well, his lymph glands were up and he was nearly dying. Whereas I've never taken a pill and it's been 6-7
people
years
don't later. Know how they're going to react in that situation. I think that's irresponsible for him to make a comment like that. I think
it's
people should have should have choice whether they want to watch those type of movies, but I think negative people do need to take a bit of onus onto themselves, you know, because they have got a responsibility too. And if they don't think that they can stay in control and keep themselves safe, they should look at what they're taking or doing. But also, that breeds a world of hate to positive people, and they're less likely to come forward and say things when stupid people, stupid comments like that. I don't think that's helpful anyone.
You feel that's a stupid comment. I think the thing with that is, partially, he might have been coming from the right spot. You know, if you're young and you're positive, but unfortunately, it is irresponsible to even recommend anybody to be positive. I mean, and I think that was just a little bit of a too flamboyant comment, whereas I think he's wanting acceptance for HIV positive people.
And San Francisco is an older crowd too. It is an older thing. So I think that's probably skewing the statistics a little bit too. That's generally a lot of guys that have moved there are probably older and have been exposed before. It's not a place that people go to and think, oh, great, I'm here, let's get HIV, happy days. That's never been my experience.
I wonder, just interestingly, I mean, in New South Wales, the law is you must declare, even in a safe sex situation, that you're HIV positive when you're having sex with someone. In Victoria, the onus is on you only to practice safe sex, unless you disclose. And then, so that's an interesting comment.
I just think you should always make the decision. This is my advice to anyone going overseas. Make the decision. Just go by the fact that do whatever you can to protect yourself or whatever you're comfortable with, and then you'll be fine.
And that ultimately, I mean, there's nothing to merit being HIV positive. Nothing at all.
All right, directly from people living with HIV AIDS Victorian website. I'm just going to read you a brief extract. A person with HIV who transmits a virus to another or exposes another person to the risk of HIV transmission may have broken the law. There are significant variations between state and territory laws concerning disclosure of your positive HIV status to sexual partners and the possible penalties for HIV transmissions. Somewhat confusingly, there are potentially two types of laws involved. These are the public health laws and the criminal laws of each state and territory. The following is a brief outline of the relevant laws in each state and territory, and I'm just going to skip to the Victorian one. In Victoria, public health laws in Victoria do not specifically require a HIV-positive person to disclose their HIV status before having sex. The law states that a person must not knowingly or recklessly infect another person with an infectious disease. Maximum penalty is a fine of up to $20,000. In addition, it is a defence to a charge under this law to show that the person who becomes infected with the infectious disease knew of and voluntarily accepted the risk of the infection. For criminal law, a person who intentionally causes another person to be infected with a very serious disease, which includes HIV, is guilty of a crime and liable to a maximum penalty of imprisonment for up to 25 years. In Victoria, the offence of conduct endangering life has been used to charge HIV-positive people who place another at risk of HIV infection. This charge carries a maximum penalty of up to 10 years imprisonment.
So there you go. And thank you for that inspiring and enlightening information. Thank you, Kevin.
I try my best.
Have you actually considered a career in radio?
No, but I work in conference administration for one of the big telcos. So okay. I'm on the phone all day. And the strangest request I've ever had is some old woman in Queensland asking to pay me to whisper sweet nothings into her ear.
Oh, wow.
I was like, sweet, if you can pay me the same amount as I'm paying, you know, at the moment. Her response was, if I could do that, do you think I'd be working?
Nana porn.
Yes. Something I did want to ask in terms of other venues outside of my hometown of Melbourne, is saunas. What differs between the Melbourne saunas and some of the international saunas? You spoke to me privately on about one of them and what they did. What was it?
Well, that was actually a dry venue called Blow Buddies in San Francisco, but the bathhouses over there, the saunas, because the city shut most of them down in the late 80s, early 90s, because to combat the AIDS epidemic, they reopened with very stringent guidelines. And one place, the place I was actually talking about, is called Blow Buddies in San Francisco, and it's a dry venue where it's mainly for... It's sort of like a cock-sucking place, as the name suggests, but you can get fucked there as well. But the fucking area is all out in the open, and the staff come along with a torch, and if you're not using a condom, they'll kick you out. And you've got to show ID and become a member to get in, and your name will be recorded. So they're very strict on that, and they check you. Yeah, it's very good. There's condoms readily available. There's lots of safe sex information about it. So I think people have really got no excuse not to make a choice. You know, to make the choice that's right for them. And in that particular venue, safe sex is the only sex you can have if it's anal sex.
So. Or voyeurism.
Yes.
Very good excuse for voyeurism there.
Oh, trust me, if you're there on Folsom weekend, there'll be no voyeurism. There's so many hot guys there. It's like, oh. But get there early. Just a tip.
Why early?
Oh, because there's a massive lineup.
Oh, the lines.
So what
yes.
you do is you go there, you get your membership straight away, and then you come back later, because otherwise you have to line all the way up the stairs and then all the way down. And
well, there's a good travel tip for your cookie.
Get in early.
Yep,
get in early.
All right, and another tip that I'll fish for, leathers. When you're traveling around, how do you carry your leathers around?
In your suitcase.
Yeah, just in your suitcase.
they're fine?
Do you know what? Yes, they are fine. My big piece of advice is wear sunblock, though, because the next day, everyone's got that, hasn't been before, has harness burn, and it looks ridiculous. It's so funny, real bad watching everyone with armbands and harness sunburn, because it gets quite hot. It's still quite warm there. But yeah, no, they're fine. I usually pack them on top because just in case they set anything off, they'll just open them up and have a look. But I've never had any problems before.
That has got to be the most interesting conversation with the airport security.
Oh, the worst one is I had a douche hose and I was going through to Dallas and this woman said to me, "What's this?" And I said, "It's a personal hygiene item." "But what's it for?" I said, "For personal hygiene." "But what do you use it for?" And I just was like, "Oh my God." I said, "I stick it up my ass to wash it out." And she just dropped it back and went, "Thank you," and zipped it back up. I was like, "I'm trying to save you from this woman." Yeah, she wouldn't give up. So that was a pretty quick search, actually.
So you haven't had anything more provocative in your bags apart from leathers and douche hoses?
Oh, no, I've had lots of sex toys and different things in there. So,
and yeah. Nobody's asked them about?
Oh, no, people are pretty used to that sort of thing in customs. And
we've got to take at least one dildo away. So.
Yeah, you always leave it on the top and hopefully they'll be a bit freaked out and they'll just go, "Okay, thank you, please go through." So
fair enough.
Well, come on, you got to take something with you, you know, for an excuse for a cavity search if he's hot.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd really. There's something about airport security cavity searching me. The idea of it seems hot, but in reality, you're not going to get the hot one.
One of those things that you kind of leave to porn. There's a big difference between porn and reality.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Any other tips that you can think of for travel buddies in the next couple of years?
What a good tip. Be careful of where your money is. Always keep like $20 in your shoe just in case, because there's pickpockets and things like that. You do drink a lot, Folsom. Or do whatever. And, you know, just be aware, really, just to keep yourself safe, money-wise, sexually. And if you know that you're going to be a little bit messy, prepare for it. Like, you know, what I do is if I'm somewhere foreign, I'll put a little note in my sock of where the hotel is or a phone number, or stick a bit of extra cash in there, because you don't want to be caught in a city off your head, just, you know, and have no way to get home. And if you get in trouble, just tell them you're Australian. They won't mug you usually.
What is this with telling everybody you're Australian?
Oh, because they hate English. And I don't know, everyone, just all the Americans just seem to like you. I was getting hassled by this homeless guy one day, and which 90% of all the homeless people are pretty good, but one guy. And I told him I was from Australia and said, I don't know, they just, "Oh, we love Aussies over here." And they always ask you about Vegemite. "Do you eat that Vegemite?"
Have they caught up that Steve Irwin's died?
Yeah. Oh, he was huge over there. Huge over there. My favorite, actually, I've got a San Francisco story. I was coming down... I might have actually been at Blow Buddies, funnily enough. But I was coming back home to our hotel in the middle of the night, and I saw these guys on the corner, and I had a police t-shirt on. It was a New York Cops t-shirt. And the girl said to me, hey, are you a cop? And I said, no, you know, I'm from Australia. And she said, see those guys up there? They're drug dealers. They'll bash you if you wear that t-shirt. So I said, I'll take it off. And then next thing she yells out, hey, Loretta, come and meet the Aussie. And next thing, all these prostitutes came toddling around the corner in high heels going, oh my God, where are you from? I'm chatting away with no shirt on to these hookers. So that was pretty fun. So that got me out of a sticky situation as well.
You're going overseas. What would be your three biggest tips? I mean, your first one would obviously be if you're going to be messy, leave something in your shoe so that, you know, people can, you know where you are, leave some money, everything like that. What else would you say would be your other two top tips when going to, say, America or overseas?
Probably be prepared. Think of a little bit of a game plan about what you'd like to do. What we like to do is get into a city midweek and do some of the cultural things first, because then if you're out at the gay bars on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you know, you sleep all day and you might miss out on them. So really choose what you'd like to do.
And although we're looking, we are sort of going to some big parties, and we certainly want to check out the gay scene in a lot of these places, although you obviously already know San Francisco very well. I've never been to San Francisco before, but we do also, obviously, you know, we want to see some of the other things as well, major artworks, or in Paris, say, Monet's Giverny, and some of these other things as well. So we've sort of factored all that in as well.
What's tip number three? Oh, it's a bit of a boring tip, but if you don't want to pay commissions on your credit card, get one of those travel money cards you can load up with American or Euros or...
Yeah, the cards.
So that's actually advance. Really good. And then, because otherwise you don't have to carry a ton of cash, and you get charged an overseas conversion rate fee every time you use your credit card. So those money cards are really good saving.
Yeah, we did that the other day, didn't we? Mm. We got, what was it? 3,000 Euros or something on one of them. Yeah, that was good.
That's another good tip for you, Cookie.
I was thinking about that, actually. Finally, the last question I want to ask about travel. It was put to me that a lot of heterosexual couples, when they go overseas, they generally tend to do a lot of the touristy things, so do the tours and go to the, you know, the scenic places. But homosexual guys tend to, before they go over, catch up with people online and make plans to meet the locals and get the locals' perspective on the places that they go visit. Do you think that's...
That's a fantastic idea. We did in Hawaii, and we got to meet an amazing guy and took us to his place. It looked amazing view, drove us around the whole island. I looked online to see if there's a nude beach there, and there was nothing, but he showed us, he took us which was really hot. It was by a military base. Oh.
So, all these military guys around, and we were in action on the beach at one point, and they're in the bushes. And
that was crazy.
Looking, it was amazing, yeah.
But yeah, no, definitely catching up with people online, but just be wary too, because we've had a friend of ours who's a business owner in Melbourne. He actually had a problem with someone he met. So be wary, like, just assume that not everyone's going to be so honest, or that they may, if put in a tempting situation, don't leave your passport out, put it in the hotel safe. These are probably more tips I'm thinking of now. Put your wallet in your hotel room. You know, don't leave stuff lying around. And just in case, no matter how much contact you've had, because you really don't know these people. So just be wary with everyone a little bit. You know, don't obviously be totally freaked out by everyone, but you need to just be sensible.
Same rules that you would apply when meeting someone online in your own country.
Exactly.
You know, just because you're in another country doesn't mean they're any less likely to steal your money or knock you on the head and rape you, or, you know, some ridiculously stupid thing.
And maybe, Cookie, going back to your previous question, you know, I think probably gay men, we have to go about growing into who we truly are in a totally different way. So I think that's possibly why we might hop online, seek friends, contacts over there when we're traveling around, as opposed to, you know, I mean, I think this is not necessarily judgment, but a heterosexual person, particularly a couple, they may, you know, there are certain conventions to follow. We're not bound by those conventions. Our morality is it comes from a different place, because we've had to just evolve differently. So I think in some ways it gives us a bit of a freedom that we don't feel so inhibited in, like we did with our dear friend in Hawaii. And I tell you, he showed us the best time, you know, the local bars, and put us in touch with other people, traveled us around, put on a few good parties for us, took us to some amazing places that, you know. So I think that's possibly why things could be different. Because we're different. Maybe sometimes challenges have advantages.
Hello.
Clever red bear. No one believes. When we went to the piano shop, they all look at him and they'll think, oh, this guy looks like he's casing the joint out. But then when he plays, they all come to him because he just doesn't look like the type of person that's going to be really good. Whip out a Beethoven number or something.
Thank you for your quick little demonstration. It was wonderful to hear, at least. Someone could actually play it better than I can.
2 or 3 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, but you've got potential. You just need a bit more time.
That's right. That's right. But for now, let us call this a night, and thank you very much for coming on and talking about hibernation and your travel plans.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
And thank you for the beautiful dinner. Thank you. Just lovely. Really nice to spend time with you guys.
We're going to put Kevin's recipe for that wonderful dinner up on the podcast at some stage.
Oh, excellent.
No, you're not. I guard my recipes with shotguns.
Yeah.
Right. For show 27, we've had Craig, the winner of Southern Hibernation 2010, and his partner, Scott. Thank you once again. And thank you to Kevin once again for a wonderful show.
I'm just a piece of the furniture now.
Right. We'll talk about who sits on you later. For all our fans
and critics,
we'd love to hear your thoughts and ideas on things we've talked about on the podcast.
Even if it's just to tell us that we're idiots or that we're hot.
So you can either email us at podcast@thecubbyhouse.net.au
or check out our Facebook fan page, The Cubby House Horde.
Plus, keep an eye out for our relaunch logo, website and rebrand of the podcast coming in October.
More details at cubbyhouse.net.au.
Thanks for listening and we'll catch you next podcast.
I'm just enjoying speaking to this beautiful,
You know how you were under before? Just ask God a question and then all there.
Because I didn't really think I'd be part of this podcast at all. I thought it was about Mr. Australasian Bear.
Oh,
and
it's about you too, Mr. Red Bear.
Oh, there you go. Mr. Southern Hibernation Bear 2006 here.
My trophy's bigger than his, though.
Oh, it is. Mine's spelt correctly, however.
Snap!
Snap
fixed that, haven't they?
But I didn't. Well, I don't know if they have. But look, I don't mind because I don't want them having to spend money on that.
No,
getting a different trophy and the sash made by Laurie Lane is a beautiful work of art. So I wear that often. I occasionally get Craig to greet people in it.
And yeah, Scott said, right. Take all your clothes off and just wear the sash. And
meet him in the sash.
So that's the only time that's been worn, apart from when he wears it.
That's right. And I wear it all the time because I didn't win the big title. So I do. Every time you're out, I put it on and
cry.
Practice your acceptance speech.
I'd like to thank
my husband for winning the competition. And now there's a sash in the house.
No,
we're actually not like that at all, are we? Really?
No.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.